Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Dr. Richard Schwartz. And we're going to be talking about his very important body of work on internal family systems, with a particular focus towards those protective, defensive places inside of us. And so if one of the things that you found on your trauma healing journey is as you start to get close to doing the real healing work, you find things get locked up or get defensive. So it's going to be a really helpful interview to understand why that happens and how to work with that. To give you a little bit of background, Richard Schwartz, PhD, is the creator of Internal Family Systems, a highly effective, evidence-based therapeutic model that depathologizes that multi-part personality. His IFS Institute offers training for professionals and the general public. He is currently on the faculty of Harvard Medical School and has published 5 books, including No Bad Parts, Healing Trauma and Restoring Wholeness with the Internal Family Systems Model. Dick lives with his wife, Jean, near Chicago, close to his 3 daughters and his growing number of grandchildren. So firstly, Dick, welcome and thank you for making the time to have this conversation together.
Happy to do it, Alex, and congratulations on all your success.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, I should say likewise, because everyone I talk to these days is talking about IFS, which is a wonderful thing to witness. For the probably very few people that are listening to this conversation that aren't familiar with internal family systems, you just want to give us a little bit of a kind of introduction to what the IFS framework is.
Sure. So the basic assumptions, and they're not really assumptions as much as what I discovered from clients as I went on this journey. The first one is that the mind is quite multiple, that there are all these what I call parts, other systems call ego states or internal objects or subpersonalities that constitute our minds, and that, at least from my exploration, that's a good thing, because all of them are valuable. They have wonderful qualities to help us in our life, resources. But, and this is relevant to this topic, trauma and what we call attachment injuries or bad parenting and the slings and arrows that you encounter in your life force them out of their naturally valuable states into roles that can be damaging and can create symptoms. And so this, I just, again, through trial and error over many years, my clients were talking about these parts, and I just started asking questions about, my background's as a family therapist, so I was trying to see how they all related to each other inside. And that's a lot of what I was learning, that they aren't what they seem, and that the mistake that most of us make is to try to get rid of or fight with the parts that give you trouble instead of going to them and getting to know why they're in these roles and help them out of those roles. So parts, there are no bad ones. That's the title of my most recent book, No Bad Parts. But they do cause us problems when they're stuck in the past, because trauma has a way of freezing them in time during the trauma, and also injecting them with what I call burdens, which are these extreme beliefs and emotions that came into our system during the trauma and then attach to them and drive the way they operate, almost like a virus. So good parts forced into extreme roles, burdened with extreme beliefs and emotions, and frozen in the past, and such that if I were to have you ask one of your parts how old it thought you were, you'd get a single digit most of the time. So they really think you're still living in that danger, and they need to protect you in the way they did back then. And so some of them do become what we call protectors. They're forced into these protective roles. Others we call exiles, because those are the parts that before they got hurt, other systems would call these inner children, innocent and, before they got hurt, playful and creative and joyful. But they're also the most sensitive parts of us, so that when they get hurt or terrified or shamed somehow, they start picking up those particular burdens, and they then have the power to overwhelm us and make us feel like we are worthless or we are terrified or we are whatever they're carrying, whatever burden they're carrying. And because of that, not realizing that they're just these little young parts, thinking we're just moving on from the trauma, we tend to lock them away inside in kind of an inner basement and try our best to stay away from those feelings and memories, just thinking that we're moving on and we're not going to look back and we're just going to go on with our life. But we're leaving these precious qualities in the dust that way. And then we don't have access to those qualities anymore either. So it's insult to injury to these exiles. The injury was the trauma and the insult is our abandonment of them. And when you have a bunch of exiles, you feel a lot more delicate and the world seems a lot more dangerous because so many things could trigger them and do trigger them. And so you have to have other parts that are forced out of their naturally valuable states to become protectors. And they start to protect and by managing your life so that things don't trigger those exiles. So they might manage your relationships so no one gets close enough to hurt you again, or manage your appearance so that you don't get rejected, or manage your performance so you get accolades to counter the worthlessness. Or some of them become the inner critics inside because they're yelling at you to try to get you to look better or behave better, or they might be yelling at you so you don't try to get out in the world and you stay small and stay safe that way. So there's a lot of different what we call manager protectors. What they have in common is the desire to preempt anything that might trigger the exiles. And they're also generally interested in pleasing people and, you know, keeping you safe that way. And also controlling your inner life and your external life. Some of them will make it so you don't feel much in your body, for example. So a lot of them are what we call the ego in general. They're the parts of you that are around all the time. And, you know, they try their best, but the world has a way of breaking through those defenses, those defensive parts, and triggering your exiles, at which point it's a big emergency because it's like these flames of raw emotion are going to pull you back into those scenes and overwhelm you and make it so you can't function. So there's another set of parts that immediately go into action, another set of protectors to get you away from that, and to maybe douse it with some substance or get you higher than the flames or distract you until they burn themselves out. And these, what we call firefighter protectors, tend to be impulsive, reactive. They don't care about the collateral damage to your body, to your family. They just want to get you out of there before you die, they think. So that's the simple map of this inner territory. Protectors, managers, and firefighters under that rubric, trying to contain and protect the exiles. And most of us have had some kind of trauma, and so we have some version of that system. But the big discovery, as I was exploring all this, is that in addition to all these parts, there's a kind of essence to us that I came to call the self, that when the parts separate and open and relax, an open space pops out immediately and spontaneously and contains these wonderful, what we call C-word qualities, like calm, confidence, creativity, compassion, clarity, courage, connectedness. And I think I missed one. There are 8 of them. And that's the big discovery of IFS, that in addition to these parts, there is this inner leader who they can learn to trust, who can run their inner world and external world and knows how to heal, knows how to go to these parts in a healing way, and knows how to heal external relationships also, and is just beneath the surface of these parts so that when they open space, that self pops out. So in doing the work, if I were working with you, Alex, I would say, okay, let's get to know some of these protectors first. And you might want to work with a critic. So I would have you, okay, focus on that critic. How do you feel toward it? I hate it because it calls me names all day. Could we ask the part who hates it to give us a little space to get to know it and see why it does that? Maybe help it not do that. Okay, now how do you feel toward it? I'm just curious about why it calls me names. So suddenly, simply by getting this other one to pull its energy out, you access curiosity. You're also calm relative to it, confident relative to it. And you might even say, and I feel sorry for it, out of the blue. That means that we have access yourself. And when you're in that state, the conversation with a critic will go well, and it'll share its secret history of how it got forced into being the critic and how much it doesn't like it. So that's a brief overview.
Yes. And I think one of the frames that's implicit in what you're talking about, which I know is an important piece of IFS, is that these parts, even if we may experience them as being problematic or we experience the tension with them, that they're ultimately acting in our interests.
Yeah, they like I said, they think you're still quite young and maybe in the middle of the trauma, and they need to protect you in the way they did back then. They haven't caught up to the fact that you're a man and much more capable than you were when it happened to you as a child. And they're just misunderstood by our culture and by our psychotherapies, such that many, many protector parts people try to get rid of or fight with. And that just makes them stronger because they think, you don't get it. If I stop doing this, you're going to die, or something terrible is going to happen. And that's, you know, writ large in the culture, that's a big problem in our world, is that we try to attack these firefighters around the world as well.
One of the places that I wanted to spend our time exploring, and first let me say what it is in a way what you're describing as those protector parts, and in a sort of broader definition, that the defensive structures that we can have within us. And I think for a lot of people, when they start to do their trauma healing work, there can be this sort of initial kind of gusto and enthusiasm, and then they start to turn towards themselves, and what they hit is these places of defensiveness and sort of and protection that's happening. And that can be obviously incredibly draining, because one's like in a civil war, one's fighting with themselves. So maybe you can say a bit more about the purpose of that protection or that defense, and then we can explore a bit more how we might approach it differently.
Yeah, so early in my career, as I was getting to know these inner systems, and clients came to me with traumas, and they would say, there's this pain in my gut, or there's this fear in my chest, and it seemed like that was what we needed to heal. So I would encourage them to go to those places, and there would be this huge resistance. And if, you know, either they would be distracted or attack me or something, or we would succeed and we would spend time in that pain or that fear, and there would be a big backlash, clearly a backlash reaction after the session. I had clients leave my office and get into an accident, claim they just didn't see the car, or spike 102 fever suddenly out of the blue. And at some point I started putting two and two together. And so what I learned the hard way is that these protectors really, really fear letting you go to these exiles. And I was like barging in and just going to these raw places without permission from the protectors that had spent decades trying to keep the client away from them. So I learned to work with protectors first. So if a client comes to me with a trauma, they say, I've got this emotional pain that drives me crazy, I'd say, we'll get to that. But first, I want to talk to the parts that don't want us anywhere near that, or afraid to let us go there. And so as you think about going there, what kind of fear comes up? And then we'll focus on that fear. And, you know, there's a kind of set protocol for helping these protectors trust that it's safe to open that door. And there's, I think, like 8 or 9 common protector fears about going to exiles. And now over the years, we've learned how to address those fears. So I'm what I call a hope merchant. I'm coming to these hopeless systems and saying, I know you don't think it's possible to heal that, and that's why you're keeping it all contained. And I know other times when you open the door, she's been overwhelmed by all this pain. And so you're determined to never let that happen again. But there is a way to go and open that door and not be overwhelmed and heal the pain. And I promise we can do that. And that's hard for a lot of therapists to say, because we've all been trained to never promise anything to our clients. But unless you come with a lot of confidence, these protectors aren't going to do it. So we negotiate. And, you know, I'll say to them, we're not going there without your permission.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when you respect protectors to that degree, they're much more inclined. And the key also is for me, the therapist, to be in that self place and those 8C qualities as I do it. So I'm not trying to manipulate the protectors. They get this clarity that I'm really sincere in respecting them and honoring them, and that I have the confidence to actually pull this off. So again, what's seen as resistance is the actually correct and rightful position that a lot of these parts have, given where they're sitting in the past and given the consequences of opening the door in the past.
Yeah. And it strikes me that when you're talking to the client, in a way, you're not necessarily talking so much to the client, you're talking to the part which you're working with, right? Like, in a way that there's the building rapport and trust there is actually more important.
Yeah, I mean, at any time the client comes into your office, their protectors are looking through their eyes. They're really checking you out and scoping you out and seeing if you waver in your confidence, or seeing if any of your parts are around that they have to worry about. And so when I start to speak, I'm talking to the client, but those protectors are focused intently on me to see how safe it is.
Yeah. And they're performing their function, right? Like they're as much as they can be a frustration to the client, they're actually doing their job well.
They're doing their job, and often they're doing it in an extreme way because they don't know that you're safe now, and they think they still have to protect you the way they did. So that's the real, one of the real negatives of when after your post-trauma is that much of you still lives as if you're still back there.
So someone that's watching this interview, that was maybe at that point that we're particularly speaking to, where they're starting to realize that to really work with the history and with the emotional pain, there's some things which are protecting that place. How do they start to work with that? So, and obviously, I know part of the recommendation here, rightly so, is, you know, working with a skilled practitioner, ideally someone that's IFS trained as well. But for someone that's starting to play with this in their own experience, what would be some of the ways to do that?
Yeah, so we have meditations around that. But if you want to get to know a protector, you know, if I were working with you, Alex, I would say, again, focus on that fear of letting you go to this raw place. Find it in your body. And most people can do that pretty readily. And then I would ask how you feel toward it. And I would ask you to get to a point where you could open your mind to it so that you could get curious and ask questions. And then I would have you direct the questions to that place in your body so that you're not thinking of the answers. You're just hearing back from that part. And the questions then, I would say, ask this protector what it wants you to know about itself. And don't think, just wait and see what comes. And you might hear, you know, you're not safe. You shouldn't do this. And then ask what it's afraid would happen if it didn't do this protective thing, if it didn't interfere or make you scared all the time. And you would hear, if I didn't do this, you would feel the pain, or if I didn't distract all the time, or you might get access to this rage that would hurt somebody. Or so that question, ask the protector what it's afraid would happen if it didn't do this job. By answering that, you're learning what it's protecting. And once you learn how desperately it's been trying to protect you, I would say, Alex, extend some appreciation to it for at least trying to keep you safe that way, which these protectors love to be appreciated because they've been vilified and hated for years. And that would soften the protector. And then a question like, ask if you could heal or change what it's been protecting. So it was liberated, it was freed from this role. What might it like to do instead? Often it's the opposite of the role it's been in. Like the scared part wants to help you have courage to be in the world. And so then we can reassure it, that's where we're headed. We're trying to free you up to be who you're designed to be. To do that, we need to go to these places that you've been blocking so that we can heal that, and that would free you up. So in that sense, I'm a systems thinker. You know, you can't go right to one part and expect it to change. You have to learn about the network that it's involved in, and you often have to start somewhere far away to come, and then come back to it to free it up. So,
and what if the defensive or protective mechanism is showing up in such a way of I don't want to talk to this part, or I don't have what it takes, or it's not possible for this to change. So how does one start to make create the space where things can actually start to open up if the protection is almost in the way of the work?
Yeah, that's a little harder to do on your own, those kinds of objections. So that's where I come in. So I'll say, I get you don't think that you can do it or that it's not possible. But I promise that it is. I've done this thousands of times. I know how to do it safely, and I'm not going to be judging you. I'm going to be supporting you no matter where we go in there. And so again, I'm just a kind of hope merchant, selling hope to these protectors who feel totally hopeless. And if you don't want to do it, we're not going to do it. But just know that it's all possible. And you could be liberated from this role. That's a very seductive pitch. So,
yeah.
On your own, it's really tough with those kinds of parts.
Sure. As we start to honor and understand and work with those defensive places, in a way, I think sometimes what can happen is that at that initial level, there's a familiarity to those places. And sometimes I think when we move beyond those places, in a way, what they've been protecting is parts or places that feel even more tricky or more vulnerable or delicate. And I'd be interested to hear you speak to that sort of transition and how we then sort of meet those places.
Yeah, so, you know, the protectors will also say, why would we want to go there? That's a horrible feeling. I've sworn that I'll never let you feel that again. And it's got a point. And every time that's been triggered, that has been horrible.
Yeah.
And you know, you didn't get out of bed for 3 days. Okay, I get why you decided never to open that door again. So I have to come again with a big pitch of, but we're not going there to let that overwhelm you again. We can keep that from happening. And you're gonna be able to be with that part that carries the pain. So you You don't become the part, you'll be with it. And you'll, as you're with it, what it needs is to show you where it got that pain in the past. And so, yeah, it'll be tumultuous while you witness what happened to you as a child, often as a child, not always. And then, but after that part feels fully witnessed, I can have you go in and get that boy out of there and take him to a safe place, at which point he'll be happy to unload the feelings and beliefs he got back there. And he'll turn into a happy, playful little kid. And I'll bring you in as the protector to see that you don't have to protect him anymore. And then you'll be freed up to do something else. And I'm good at it. You can do all of that. And it's up to you. You don't have to. So again, I'm just saying, and it's sincere, it is up to these protectors, but none of them like their jobs. If there really is a chance to get out of them, then they go for it.
It also, I was thinking as you were talking that in a way, when one starts doing this sort of work, because of how the fragmentation is, there's a lack of access to the gifts and the capacities of each of these places. And so in a way, one starts the journey in the least resourceful place, but part of the payoff of the work is the regaining of those resources.
Yeah. Although there still are those 8 C's of self. So yes, you don't have access to the resources of the exiles, but you do have access to self, and self, like I said, can't be damaged and knows how to heal. So if I can get you to go to these places, and you know, I know in the trauma field, there's a lot of worry about once you go there, making sure you don't go over the window of tolerance and following closely how much feeling the person can handle. But what I find is if I can get you, Alex, into courage and clarity and confidence, if you come in that state, you have an enormous window of tolerance, so that when we get to that boy that carries all the pain, you might start crying like crazy, but I'm not worried about it because I know you are in self and you can handle it. You know, I might say, is this okay? And you say, yeah, I can do it. Whereas if you weren't in self, you'd say, oh no, this is terrible.
I think what's really interesting as well is often we don't realize our potential and our capacity because of how energy is being consumed with these sort of internal struggles and in a way, I was thinking that yes, IFS is a roadmap to unpick and untangle and create ease in that, but it's also a pathway to unlocking potential, right? That there's a kind of reclaiming of those capacities.
Yeah, not only are you cut off from the qualities of these exiles, but your protectors are polarized all the time. And it's like a country with a lot of exiles, as we're looking at the United States, but also Israel and so on. When there's a lot of exiles, there's going to be a lot of very extreme protectors, and they're going to fight with each other. And so most trauma survivors have these inner battles going all the time that are, like you said, very energy consuming. And don't let you think clearly, and so do suppress your potential. So there are 4 goals of IFS. The first we've been talking about, which is to liberate these parts from the roles they've been forced into. The second is for all the parts to come to trust self as a leader, that they're, a lot of these protectors in particular are what in family therapy we called parentified children. They're young, and they're in over their heads, but they think they've got to run everything. They think they've got to be the leaders, but they're not equipped. So as they come to trust there's a you that can do it instead, it's a big, big relief to them, and to realize you're not a little kid anymore. So that helps you access a lot of potential too. And then the third goal is to what we call reharmonize the inner system, so that we'll bring together the parts that have been fighting with each other and help them find a new relationship. And how can they work together? And how can they support you and whatever you're going to do in these new roles? And people stop even noticing their parts because they don't disappear, but they're just not standing out like they did because they're not embattled. And they feel much more unitary. They feel much more integrated that way. And then the fourth goal is to bring more self-leadership to your external world, so that not only are you relating as a leader inside, but you're relating to your family and to the world from this, from those eight C's more.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I was thinking in terms of how one meets the work. Like you mentioned, for example, when working with those places, for example, there are certain meditations. And I was just thinking, like, what's the general approach? And you, it feels very implicit in lots of things that you said in terms of kind of openness and curiosity and so on. But I'd love you to speak a bit about, in a way, the inner landscape that we're cultivating, which most facilitates IFS and indeed in inner work more broadly.
I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
So I guess what I'm asking is, you were talking about when we're, for example, meeting those parts, that there's an acceptance, there's a curiosity, there's a sort of openness. And I was thinking more broadly in terms of when one is doing this work or inner work more generally, what are some of the qualities that really help that be effective?
Yeah, and most of the time when you first meet these parts, you don't feel those qualities because you don't like them, or you're afraid of them. And so the beginning is just getting the ones who are polarized with them, who've been giving you that dislike or that fear, to let you handle the part. And to, you know, we even say, would ask these parts to go into a kind of waiting room until we're done in there. And that seems to help people have a bit of a boundary. So we do that, ask these other parts to just open space until you do start to manifest the qualities you just mentioned relative to the target part. And so once you do, then we just start the protocol, and it involves asking these questions, getting the answers, giving ultimately compassion to the part, and you know, again, reassuring it that you're not 5 years old anymore, and thanking it for its service back when you were. And again, that's a huge relief to a lot of these parts.
Yeah, you were, something you said a few times, which I think it's an interesting one, is where we haven't got loads of time left, but I think it's a good one to sort of amplify as we come towards the end. You were saying about, but healing is possible. And I really like what you were saying around, as a practitioner, in a way, modeling the confidence around that. And sometimes in the sort of broader therapeutic world, I sometimes think people go to someone in their most vulnerable moment, and that person's energy is actually lower than the client is. And it's like, let's sort of go in. It's like this, and in a way, there's something around the potential that we have. And I'd love you to say a bit about the power of IFS, like some of what you've observed, and the capacity that people really do have for healing, even when trauma has been significant.
Yeah, that. I'm continually amazed and impressed at how much these parts can transform and what happens when they do, in terms of symptoms, but not only, just in terms of what we've been talking about, the ability of the people to feel so much more integrated and access their full potential. And so this is, you know, some people say, well, isn't this like mindfulness? Well, mindfulness is a good first step in the sense of separating and noticing what are thought of as thoughts and emotions from a place of acceptance. But this is, you know, it's not, from my point of view, compassionate to just notice suffering beings and stay a bit distant from them. This means actually going to the thoughts and emotions, or the parts that are carrying them, with love, and in your mind holding them and becoming a kind of active good parent to them, which is what they've been waiting for and what they've been needing, And as they trust that you can do that on a regular basis for them, and as you get them out of where they're stuck in the traumas, they start to unload all this the stuff you picked up. And as they unload it, you feel much, much lighter. And they feel much lighter and more playful, and they become these happy inner children. And then the protectors come in and see that. And so you get this major transformation that many, many clients thought was never going to happen, would never be possible in their lifetimes. And that's the reason, you know, I turned 74 this year, and I still love doing it. I still can't stop, because I just get such a feels like such a privilege to be with people as they do that transformation.
Well, I think in a way also what is, I think, you know, going back to like where we started about IFS having such enormous traction, particularly in recent years. And I think one of the reasons why that is, I mean, no more than I do, but from, you know, from my outside perspective, is that it brings an organized understanding to what often can feel chaotic in our experience. It's like, I think sometimes in our suffering, we can feel very alone, and we can feel like we're broken, like there's just something that's wrong with us. And in a way, by bringing the sort of beauty of systems understanding and thinking, it's a big, beyond the methodology for change, it's also a big reframe of what's happening inside of us.
Very much a reframe of what these parts are, what these symptoms are, and that issue of I'm broken or I'm worthless. As people access self, they see that that's just a part that feels that way. I am all these C word qualities. That's who I really am. And that's a huge shift in somebody's self-confidence or self-conception. So yeah, just the conceptual framework, like you said, reframes all kinds of things.
I'm curious as to what's emerging in your thinking at this point. You know, IFS has had some major amazing traction and I think being adopted in a lot of different places. I'm really interested as it comes to the end around what you're hoping to see happen next. Like what's emerging in you and in your hopes for this work?
Yeah, my focus increasingly the last 5 years or so has been sort of beyond psychotherapy to larger systems. So we have a number of initiatives to bring IFS to leaders of various kinds. I work with a lot of social activists that helping them do their activism from self rather than their righteous parts, or from helping them with the fear that gets in their way. We're running training programs for executive coaches so that leaders of organizations create self-led organizations rather than protector-led organizations, which is the case in most. So I'm trying to bring IFS to the psychedelics world, because that's going to be a big portal to a lot of wisdom and healing. So yeah, there's a variety of ways that we're trying to, there are initiatives to bring it to education so that kids, when they get hurt, know to go to the part that's hurt rather than lock it up. excuse me, there are initiatives in medicine. So really trying to help people see it as a paradigm shift, that it's not just a psychotherapy, it's really a totally different way of understanding the mind that applies to all kinds of human activities. And you know, especially now as we see these crises in the world, if the leaders in those crises could approach them from self, it would make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get into the topic of what we call legacy burdens, which drive a lot of these conflicts around the world, which are these beliefs and emotions that came down through the generations, related to traumas that happened, you know, even centuries before you. So, and there's a way to unload that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Dick, for people that want to find out more about IFS, can you tell us the best place to go and also some of what they can find in terms of sort of different trainings and so on that you have available?
So our website is ifs-institute.com. So most all of our offerings are there. We run trainings all over the world, and the demand is enormous. So it's challenging to get into a training a lot of the time. We have a lottery system. But keep trying, don't get frustrated. In the meantime, we have what's called the Online Circle Program, which gives you most of the content. It just doesn't, in the trainings, we have a 3-to-1 ratio of PA program assistants to students so that you get a lot of personal supervision, which, because it's very delicate, these inner systems, we really want people to know at least how to not do harm to clients as they go in. So the trainings are very intense. You do a lot of personal work too. And there's all kinds of stuff on YouTube, and there's a lot of the book that people love the most is this No Bad Parts book that came out about 3 years ago. And so that's where I would send people initially.
Wonderful. Dr. Fisher Schwartz, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and the wonderful body of work that you've brought to the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. You're a great interviewer, and happy to talk to you.